is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The earthquakes in Turkey. The first quake, 7.8 magnitude, struck in the early hours near the city of Gaziantep, southern Turkey. Hours later, as people were still searching, reports the BBC, for survivors in the rubble, there was a similar-sized quake 60 miles to the north. I welcome Thaddeus McCotter of American Greatness, my colleague and co-host, and we welcome Malcolm Hohnlein, who's traveling. He's in the region. He's in Jerusalem. And Malcolm tells me that there was a sense of an earthquake as far south as Israel. We're looking at an earthquake zone that runs all the way down Asia Minor into Africa. Malcolm, a very good day to you. The earthquake is now reported to have damaged huge pieces of residential towers. They're just now getting the report of how many wounded, how many dead. I'm guessing that Israel will deploy that mobile hospital that was apparent in several pandemics and several emergencies around the world. Is that correct? Good day to you, Malcolm.
Good day to both of you. And it's indeed a great tragedy with thousands of people believed dead. Some think the toll will be double, triple what we know already. The number of buildings that were destroyed is astronomical. You know, there have been earthquakes in Turkey before, but this, they say this is the worst in 100 years. And Turkey's been going through a variety of earthquakes with the election coming up that has been very disruptive, the economy in ruins, which has been disruptive. And now this coming at a very bad time for Turkey. Israel is indeed mobilizing aid to go there. I saw pictures of people, first responders who were being loaded onto planes to fly to Turkey. Medicines and other supplies were being sent to both Turkey and Syria. Syria, they say, at the request of the Russians, but Syria's President Assad is denying that he requested any aid from Israel. He does not take aid from Israel. They will take aid from whoever because the situation there is really quite quite desperate. So we'll have to see there's more clarity about the extent of the destruction. But it is true that you could feel some of the aftershock and in Tel Aviv, and some buildings were reported to have swayed a little bit. And it's true that it's an issue of discussion in Israel because some people say that it sits on the fault line also. But there was no damage and nothing serious that came of it. But it puts people on edge.
I note the BBC also reports about Syria, as Malcolm flags. Difficult to get reporting out of there, but the Syrian war-torn city of Aleppo, among the areas to have borne the brunt of Monday's deadly earthquakes, devastated parts of southern Turkey. So we're extending into the combat zone here. Huge residential collapses. More to be known in the next days because the reporting now is incomplete. Thaddeus?
Malcolm, we're seeing efforts by the international community to resurrect the Iran nuclear pact. Yet at the very same time, we're seeing continued provocations by the Iranian regime. What's going on, Malcolm?
I really wish I could give you a clear answer, Thaddeus, about what's going on. But this is really, I think, a serious matter. If you remember last week, I mentioned I mentioned something I saw in Iranian papers about the visit of the Qatari foreign minister to his counterpart in Iran. And he said he brought messages from a number of European countries, but he also said he had a message from the United States. And they alluded to it containing references to the conditions necessary to enable negotiations to resume. With all the massive human rights violations going on in Iran, despite the fact that today Khamenei said he was releasing tens of thousands, it doesn't impact the real political prisoners. It's still huge numbers, and the violations are going on unabated. And the references to wanting to resurrect it, even reports that the Soros-backed and Koch brothers-backed group is convening to talk about how you can bring it back. With Iran now engaging with Russia in the Ukraine and violating all the sanctions, everything that we're supposed to be standing for, the thought that we would even entertain a resumption of any kind of negotiations with the Iranians at this point, I hope is far-fetched. But frankly, at this point, you never know.
Our concern, Malcolm, about Iran is that it's a bad actor in the Ukraine war. That certainly has to be part of the calculation, yes?
100% has to be part of it. And, you know, the Europeans, after finally realizing what Iran has been doing to them and the price they're paying, especially now with in the most blatant form in their involvement in the Ukrainian war, you would have thought that this this would be the red line that finally brings them to their senses. But and they're saying that Iran's arming of Russia crossed the red line and Tehran appears to believe it can't go back. These are headline statements that are being made by leaders. And instead, what we're seeing is they're increasing the cooperation and supposedly moving forward with a plan to build a factory to manufacture 6,000 Iranian drones every year in Russia, which would give them a permanent supply, especially to use right now in the conflict in Ukraine. So there's an emerging military confluence between the two countries. A high-level Iranian delegation flew to Russia a couple of weeks ago to visit the planned site for the factory and work out the details to get it up and running. So this is not hypothetical anymore. This is real. It's in the works. And I hope that saner minds will prevail and we're not going to see attempts to resurrect the deal. We heard from American officials constantly lately that the deal is dead. They don't want to declare it dead. They don't want to close the door on it. But there's no negotiations, no talk. And yet constantly there are references in the Iranian press, which is not reliable. But, you know, there's too much smoke to believe that somebody isn't still talking about it.
A puzzle, Malcolm. Our allies have also made it very clear that Iran is not trustworthy and the deal cannot go forward. Don't I remember France saying something like that and maybe the UK? I mean, they're part of the deal as well.
Yes. And that is the change. Whereas they, the three, Germany, France, and Great Britain, were leading Europe on this and were insistent on going ahead with negotiations despite violations, despite the fact that they're not in compliance. They are constantly moving ahead and and introducing new violations, more aggressive actions. With just this week in Azerbaijan, they arrested seven people, part of an Iranian plot there, as we reported. Georgia earlier reported in other places. But Borrell, the European Union's top diplomat, foreign minister, he doesn't want to give up on the deal. And he says it's the only way to stop Tehran's nuclear program. It didn't stop it till now. And he said this on a train coming back from an EU leaders meeting in Kiev. He said that that reviving the pact is important and that the critics of it don't value enough the dangers of a nuclear Iran. Well, it's precisely because they do value the danger of a nuclear Iran that they don't want to see more concessions and allowing Iran to move forward.
Back to Israel from Iran, which is a predator state. The PA is a junior predator state, Malcolm. But as I understand, the standalones, the rogue outfits such as Lion's Den, are in fact working for Hamas, which is using Iranian money. Is that all correct formula?
Look, it's a complicated picture, and I learned a lot more about it during my days here. You know, we've always said there are no such things as those lone wolves, and there aren't. But because people are influenced by the media, by the textbooks that they use in the PA, by the preaching of extremist ideologies and preachers in mosques, and because the tolerance by the PA, the slave, pay to slay, where they reward those who engage in terrorist acts and who kill Israelis or anybody in Israel, are rewarded with considerable sums of money. They raided a house recently of one terrorist and found more than $100,000 from the PA. Their families get homes if theirs are blocked. So they get rewarded in many ways. The PA is sending clear messages. And Abbas is not leading. You know, he's in the 15th, 16th year of his four-year term. He doesn't want anything disruptive. He won't stand up. He stopped cooperation between the security forces of Israel and the PA, although I believe there's still some cooperation going on because it's in the PA's interest. It's what saves them. They won't go in to the places where the terrorists are operating. So Lion's Den was rooted out, but there are now a lot of groups, independent groups like Lion's Den, that are emerging, and we see the media continue to encourage, and there's no counteraction. There's a general sense of hopelessness amongst the Palestinians. They feel that their government is not representative at all. And, you know, we see that most of the Palestinian terrorists who were arrested, according to the PA's leaders themselves, say that these were Palestinian fighters and they were sent to fight and kill Israelis. Now, when you have the leadership making statements like that, the you know, there's no wonder why the young people look to this and say, we have no other hope. This is a way my family will get money and act out, as that 13-year-old did, shooting three people, two to death, a father and a young son, and a soldier who tried to disarm him. So it is a very difficult situation, and because when it's an identifiable group, it's easier to deal with it than when it is these individual unit cells that are springing up throughout the West Bank.
We go from the West Bank north to Lebanon. You tell me UNIFIL's been disgraced for repeatedly, Malcolm. What's new about UNIFIL?
Well, what's new is the report that came out, and it's called a costly failure because of the amount of money that has been involved. And they have to issue a biannual report to the Security Council, and they conceded in this one their failure to interdict the weapons destined for Hezbollah. Usually they protest it. Here they finally acknowledge it. And it tells a terrible story of the spike in the pattern of harassment and assaults on UNIFIL forces by men in civilian clothes who are obviously Hezbollah operatives. And they deny access to Hezbollah's military sites. They also talk about the Lebanese armed forces, which gets, you know, $250,000, $236 million in U.S. funding, routinely obstructs UNIFIL operations and access. And it's becoming clearly untenable. And I think the countries participating, including the United States, are going to have to reassess. They do play a role in being a means of communication between Israel and Hezbollah. But beyond that, we see that they're not fulfilling their mandate at all.
We need some good news. Thaddeus?
Yes, Malcolm. The good news is Sudan and Israel are looking at ways of establishing diplomatic relations.
Yes, there are. The foreign minister of Israel visited the Sudan recently and came back and made announcements that he believes that they are on the road to renewing diplomatic relations. We see that there's going to be a visitor from the Sudan coming to Israel, supposedly, in the next days. It's not going to happen immediately, but it is certainly on the way. One of the conditions set is that they have to move towards a civilian government, you know, from the military coup that's led by Burhan, who took power at that time. But they clearly have changed their policies, are moving to be more involved in the region. And the United States, as you know, remove them from the terror list in exchange for their initial indication at the time of the Abraham Accords to join, but they never established diplomatic relations. And it looks like now we're going to be moving on to the next step, which is important because many African countries want to join, want to have the relationship, and Sudan's joining will help foster that as well.
More good news, although this is compromised by the threat. A new town in the Negev, you tell me its name is Hanun, south of Sderot. Malcolm, Sderot is a target for the bad actors in Gaza. Hanun would be the same, is that correct? But it's good news?
It's just south of Sderot. And this it is good news because it tells you something really important about how people feel, the level of commitment, the civic responsibility that people take. And they're establishing this new community. It's a response to the terrorist attacks to say that they will not be deterred, that they will not let the enemies threaten them and diminish their commitment. So this is a very positive statement coming on this week, especially that 500 families will be joining this community.
Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. He's traveling. He's in Israel. He's in Jerusalem. Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. The Dusty One's coming. Now, the Dusty One is an archaeologist. And certainly archaeology is now in the news because that fault zone that just opened up again and caused tragic damage to Turkey and Israel and Syria. Malcolm said you can feel it in Jerusalem. That's as old as civilization in the whole region. In fact, 12th century BCE, there was an earthquake like that. that may very well have destroyed six or seven civilizations at once. So when we come back, the dusty one. I'm John Patrick.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.